This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. As always, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW. They are bilingual. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. By the way, they're bringing soccer to the airwaves here. Opportunity now to catch up with Houston Dynamo defender Griffin Dorsey. Dynamo last night, a 5-0 win over Portland. This was dominant. Did you see that coming, Griffin?
You know, I want to say that I think we could all feel it. We've been really hungry for a win at home and just a win in general. And I don't think I saw 5-0 happen, but a win for sure was in the sights.
You know, your ability to get forward and get into the box, in my personal opinion, has brought a different dimension to the Dynamo, a different piece of the Dynamo attack that has to be respected. You earn the penalty 4 minutes in by getting into the box. You have this innate ability to do that. It's really come together. Just take me into maybe learning and understanding this position a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I grew up as a winger. That's what I played in college. That's what I played all the way through high school. And once I got to the professional level, I had to start learning outside back, balancing the attack and defense. But I think the ability to get forward and get into the box is really stems from my youth as a winger.
So combining that with, you know, and marrying that to the defensive side of it, and then you got to go box to box. I mean, this to me is probably the least desired position in the league. And I'm watching you do this last night, or in the game. And I'm watching you do this last night. And I said on the air, I said, you know, I just would not want to be an opponent in the wide area, because there is one thing you're going to have to do. You are going to have to match the physical output of Griffin Dorsey.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I mean, I understand for a lot of people, it's maybe not the most desired position, but for me, you know, I've fully embraced the defending aspect of the position, and I've always loved the attacking aspect. And for me, it's the perfect position. It marries those two together and gives me a little bit more freedom.
Griffin Dorsey joining us. You know, your story is a great one, and this is why I really wanted to do the interview with you. The other thing that really jumps out to me is that a couple of years ago, when Todd Ramos brought you to Houston from Toronto FC, you had not played a lot in Major League Soccer at that point. And you have to maybe say, despite the team not getting great results, this became a real opportunity for you. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, very fair to say. I signed a Generation Adidas contract out of the draft in 2019. I had 3 years guaranteed, and after 2.5 years, I got released from Toronto. So I didn't really have a home, didn't have a team, didn't have a place to play. And for a little while, I was kind of just floating to see what was going to happen. And when I got the call from Tab for the opportunity to come to Houston, for me, it was just a massive opportunity to stay in the league and enjoy every ounce of opportunity I could possibly soak up. And since then it has kind of flourished into something that, you know, I'm grabbing with both hands and I'm going to continue to ride.
All right, you're an ultra confident guy. That's what I see. I hear all the things come back to me. What a professional attitude. This guy trains like a first team player every single day. You know, you hear these things, it's easy. It comes to you. But was there ever a time you're worried? Because look, you leave the University of Indiana early. You haven't completed your education. You're making the shot at the pros because people are interested in you, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's pretty dicey stuff in a way, right? It's real.
For sure it is. And, you know, I'm a true advocate that, you know, hard work pays off. And that's what I've attested my career to up until now. And I will continue to attest my career to that. I believe that if you work hard, things will work out for you. And, you know, I didn't stop working hard in Toronto. Things didn't work out, but ultimately the move to Houston was exactly what I needed. And once again, I attest the hard work to that.
Dynamo defender Griffin Dorsey joining us here. Leagues Cup has been a great thing for you this year. I mean, essentially, you've earned a starting right back job. Got an incredible tournament. For me, you were the top player for the Houston Dynamo, game in and game out, scored the spectacular goal. You know, when you got that opportunity, like you said, you grabbed it with two hands. Just take us through that tournament and what it meant to you this year, and where you felt your confidence kind of blossoming now that you were getting some, you know, pretty consistent minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me this year, it was the start of the year was a bit of a battle to find an opportunity on the field. You know, an early opportunity that didn't go so well at New England early in the year. And then another opportunity that you know, panned out pretty well away against LAFC were two of my major opportunities at the beginning of the year. And so for me, I was just looking for more opportunities. And once again, the hard work is really what brought those opportunities to fruition. And then once I got it, you know, I was going to grab onto it with both hands.
The training every day, the playing, the passion for the game. It is hard work. It is a grind. You have to be ready. It doesn't make it any easier down here in this climate. On the other hand, I get the sense that you enjoy hard work and you enjoy the process of making sure you're ready for when that moment comes and training like a first team player. And not everybody has that ability to do that.
Yeah. You know, I think in Toronto, I learned a lot about that. Guys like, you know, Michael Bradley is a great example of a through and through professional. And to be able to witness that at a very young age, you know, kind of gave me the motivation to have that mentality, because that's something that you can control. And there's a lot of things in this profession that are out of your control. And I believe that if you can control what you can control, things will end up panning out the way you want them to.
All right. So as we're doing this interview, I just got a text from Dynamo Communications man, Jack Holmes. And he said, by the way, Griffin is finishing his degree at Indiana. So where are you fitting the time in to do that?
Yeah, that's just been going on for the last 5 years. When I left in 2019, you know, Indiana had a great program called Hoosiers for Life. My scholarship was upheld by the university for the remainder of my life. And it's always been a goal of mine to finish chipping away for the last 5 years. And I graduate in December. I got three more classes this semester and then I'm done.
Can we ask you what you're getting your degree in? Because I know it's not a doctorate or anything in playing the right back position. So what is it?
I'm getting a degree in liberal studies and a minor in sociology.
Very, very good. So back to Indiana and the Hoosiers and playing under the legendary, you know, Todd Yeagley, his father, Jerry. Just talk a little bit about the program and the pride in it, because, you know, you talk about great college programs. This is one of the best, and you know, it's one that maybe mirrors the professional game closer than others.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I really loved about Indiana, since the moment I stepped on campus as a recruit, was the sheer message of family. You know, you see it with the Yeagleys and how passionate they are about IU men's soccer, but the environment that surrounds you in that in that locker room, it's really something special. I mean, you feel like you're at home. You know, I was only there for a year and a half, and I still talk to the 10 recruiting class guys that were in my class, and you know, we have a great bond, and you know, they really breed a family mentality there.
Griffin, when you made the decision or were contemplating the decision of going Generation Adidas, again, a big decision, right, to leave college early, was there a big lobbying from Todd Yeagley, the head coach, to keep you there, or how did he, you know, how did he deal with that with you? Because he doesn't want to lose a great recruit like you.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there were some conversations. I had sat down with him and, you know, I think he had a bit some reserve about me going and maybe not being ready on maybe a tactical defensive mindset, maybe a little bit of immaturity. And I think in all honesty, he was right about that in some ways. But I firmly believe that I had to jump in and learn how to swim. And that's kind of where my decision lied. And that's where my decision continues to lie.
And you got to take risks sometimes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, risk reward, you felt good about it, obviously. How difficult was it to kind of get up to speed in Major League Soccer when you got there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was quite difficult. You know, I had 2.5 years of, you know, struggling through an environment in Toronto that, you know, breeds success. You know, 2019 was the year I got drafted. They made it to the final that year. I didn't play more than maybe one game. And, you know, that's a tough pill to swallow when you're coming from being a star at a college team and kind of being a star as you're growing up. But yeah.
Was there ever times in Toronto where you felt kind of like an outsider because you weren't playing a lot and you were a rookie and all these star players were achieving things?
For sure. For sure. There were definitely times. And, you know, the mix of the second team with the first team makes you feel like you don't really have a team and you can feel all over the place pretty quickly, but that's this profession and you have to be ready to handle that at any stage of your career.
Griffin Dorsey joining us, Dynamo defender, having an outstanding run of form here. I was just totally impressed with the polish that it seems has been added to your game from delivery to decision making. I mean, I don't think anybody ever questioned, you know, your power, your strength, your ability to get up and down. But you know, the quality now cutting inside and some of your delivery is just fantastic. How hard have you worked at that? I mean, you know, that doesn't just come by clicking your fingers. I mean, what's been going on to show us this polish and sheen and these great balls that you're now hitting?
Yeah, you know, I think when you, especially at the beginning of this year, when you don't have the opportunity to play as many minutes, you have a lot more opportunity to learn and grow in areas that you want to get better at. And so I sat down with the coaching staff and just had conversations about where they believe I can grow and how I can grow as a player on the field. And they worked with me, you know, while I wasn't playing, to get me ready for an opportunity where maybe I can shine and show some of that hard work.
There were some moments in the League's Cup where, I mean, I'm trying to remember which game it was, but the amount of times that you spearheaded the Dynamo attack from the right back position. I mean, you were the strongest card attacking wise on that night. And I can't remember which opponent it was. I'm not sure which it was. You might be able to help me, but it was a night they couldn't contain you. I mean, you must have had 4 or 5 runs cutting inside that they just had no answer for. And all of a sudden you're running upon the back four almost.
Yeah.
Which game was that?
I think that was Charlotte.
Charlotte. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a testament to the hard work and also the coaching staff sticking with me and continuing to help me grow when I can.
Yeah, let's add talent to that, too. It's just not hard work. We're going to add talent to that. All right, we're talking to Griffin Dorsey. Did you see it in Portland's eyes last night early in that game that they just may not have it, and this was a time to just stick the dagger in them? Because from my vantage point, I saw guys that looked like they wanted to head to the airport and get back to the Pacific Northwest.
You know, I think there's a serious home field advantage playing in Houston because no one wants to be here in the summer. And I think automatically you have one step ahead of your opponent. And I think you see it in Portland's eyes, but I think the way that we start games, you can see it in most teams' eyes. And last night we were able to put Portland away early, but I do believe that there is a huge home field advantage with the heat that's in Houston. And, you know, already being one step ahead of the opponent.
Griffin Dorsey joining us, Houston Dynamo defender, by the way, again on Wednesday. It's into the Open Cup in the semifinals. We'll talk about that in a minute here. I was pretty astonished they played with such a high line based on the fact on a couple of things. Number one, economy of running and just keeping the game in front of them. But on the other hand, they had a number of changes, which I would have thought just to keep everybody compact might have made some of those changes work a little easier. I was just blown away at how high a line they had. Were you guys ready for that? I mean, you were obviously ready for it, but was it a surprise?
I think the high line was a bit of a surprise for us as well. But yeah, I mean, you go into those games kind of taking what you can get. And I think we did a great job of taking what we were given last night.
Griffin Dorsey joining us. Real Salt Lake. It's a different challenge. It's a team that's got Christian Arango now that makes them a little bit different, I think, than the last time you guys have seen them. Maybe a thought or two on them ahead of the semifinals of the Open Cup.
Yeah, I mean, I think this league is full of a lot of really good teams, and Salt Lake is one of those teams. You know, they're a hard team to beat, home or away. And, you know, we have a lot of respect for them. And for us, it's just about doing our job one game at a time.
Griffin, before I let you go, you know, as I watch Lionel Messi, I love the humility of the man and the way he weaves his teammates in, much like Hector Herrera. Just a word or two on Hector and, you know, how he does all these little subtle things to kind of weave the team in and connect even the younger guys in some cases.
Yeah, I mean, I've spoke about Hector a lot, and you know, I think the thing that I talk about the most is, you know, there are in your career, or at least I know for me, in my experience, there are a few guys that have just this. It's like an it factor, like a greatness that you can almost feel. You don't even have to see it; you're just around him, and you can feel it. And, you know, Jozy Altidore, Michael Bradley, just some of the names that I've had around me that have had that. He's one of those guys. And when you're around him, you can feel it. When you're on his team, you can feel it. And when you see some of the things that he does, you can see it. He's a great player. He's a great human. And although he doesn't speak a lot of English, you still feel like you connect with him on a personal level.
That aura that he has, you know, when you're sitting in your locker before a game, it must be pretty nice to look across the room and see Hector Herrera.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Griffin, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Keep up the great work. It's been a joy to watch you play. Best of luck against Real Salt Lake. Thanks for joining us tonight here on ESPN 97.5.
Thank you so much, Glenn. Have a good one.
All right. That's Griffin Dorsey. And you can see him and the Dynamo in action on Wednesday night. They take on Real Salt Lake semifinals of the Open Cup. We will have a pregame show at 8 o'clock right here on ESPN 97.5. Game will kick after 8:30, and it will be the second of two semis. So the Dynamo will know going into that game likely who they could potentially get, and that could potentially be Leo Messi and Inter Miami. All right, we'll take a break here, brought to you by John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, 713, call now.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, there's no better person to go to after Spain winning the Women's World Cup in Australia, New Zealand. And, of course, this segment brought to you by John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW. They are the presenting sponsors of our show. A big thank you to John and his firm for supporting the great game of soccer on the radio. And they urge you to download and subscribe to the podcast at Spotify, Apple, and Google. He is Jordy Sunyer, TV3. And Jordy, I must say, fantastic run in this tournament by Spain, playing scintillating football, lots of ties to even the Spanish culture. But what has been the reaction in Spain right now? And just kind of take us down to that level.
Hello, Glenn. Well, as you may imagine, and it has been a shock result. It has been a surprise result because nobody would have bet for Spain winning the Women's World Cup after the two dreadful performances in the last two World Cups. But yeah, it was like a perfect storm. And of course, as it was the surprise result that it was, reaction has been fantastic here in Spain. Many people yesterday watching the game in giant screens around the country, throwing parties to watch the game. 65% of share audience on national public television. The game was broadcast in what was here Sunday at noon, so it was a fantastic TV time for this game. And it has been a huge success, but of course it's been a success against all odds, not just in footballing terms, but also if you look at how women's football was treated by the Spanish FA in recent years.
Jordy Sunyer joining us, TV3. Yeah, I think that's a really natural question to ask you is, you know, because of the dominance of the men's team and the super clubs of Barcelona and Real Madrid and their histories and the way soccer is in this country, my assumption is there's been a bias against women's football. So I would think that this is something that may change perception.
It should, because I want to tell you something. You have to remember, or I'll tell you, because, of course, maybe this game wasn't shown on the US. 7 months ago, Barcelona won the Spanish Super Cup, and the players themselves had to pick their medals from a table that was laid beside the pitch. There was nobody of the Spanish Football Federation to give the medals to the winners. And it was 7 months ago. And these are the same people, the Spanish FA directors, who, of course, were traveling to Australia to watch the final and then greet the players and appear in all photographs and videos. And that has been a huge controversy in Spain. It's been unfair because what these girls have done has been extraordinary, extraordinary. But during the celebrations, there's a picture of the Spanish FA president, Luis Rubiales, former player, kissing Jennifer Hermoso on her lips without her consent. It was, of course, a gesture of euphoria. He probably didn't exactly know what he was doing. And what at the first sight seemed, as I was saying, a picture of euphoria, If you look at it from another colder perspective, it ranges from nearly sexual abuse and nearly to sexual harassment. And that's how it's being read by some Spanish media. What is this? Kissing a girl without her consent in public. The girl said, "I didn't like it. It was not good. It was not fair. It may be euphoria, but it's not correct." And the controversy after winning a World Cup, many titles in Spanish press, many hours of radio, many hours of television are devoted to what the Spanish FA president did to Jennifer Hermoso, who's now playing in Mexico. So this country, Glenn, this country is terrible. What they've done, what this team has done is truly incredible. It's nearly a Hollywood story. But in Spain, we are not speaking about what they've done. We are speaking about Rubiales' kiss, and that's, I think that's awful. That's incredible.
Well, that's media today. It's all about the hits and the likes and getting attention. And listen, I read a lot of quotes from Hermoso, said, "Look, there's nothing behind this. It was an awkward moment. That's all. It was euphoria." She's totally downplayed it. So this is, again, the wonderful media now that's around the world that's willing to do everything and anything. But let's move on to the football, because we got to celebrate the way this team played. A couple of cycles ago, I was watching them, and I know they had rough World Cups, but I was watching the technical ability of the Spanish players. And I just said, man, this is amazing. This is the absolute culture of Spain. I mean, it just translated over to the women's side of football. And I just said, you know what? One day when the gap of physicality is changed, the knowledge, the culture, and the gap of physical is narrowed, you better watch out, because Spain has football institutional knowledge. It has history. And so this to me is not a surprise. And this has happened with a lot of countries over the last three World Cup cycles.
And let me remind you of the 2010 Men's World Cup that Spain won thanks to that Andres Iniesta goal. I know I'm bringing the analysis to a local point of view, but this is an analysis that has been shared by many journalists and analysts here in Spain. The core of that men's team in 2010 was Barcelona. The core of that 2023 women's team that has won the World Cup is Barcelona again, because the two teams, Pep Guardiola's and Jonathan Giralde's teams, have opened the way and have shown the way of how to be competitive in world national teams football. Because if you remember, it's history repeating, because before 2010, the men's team wasn't able to reach further than the quarterfinals in World Cups. There was this kind of permanent deception at every World Cup, Spain getting out at the last 16 or quarterfinals. And with the Spanish national team, women's national team, it was the same. 2015, there was a turmoil as usual around the players, problems with the Spanish FA, with the support they were giving to women's football. 2019 was not good. But in 2021, Barcelona won their first Champions League. They have been Champions League winners again this year, 2023, against Wolfsburg. And again, success of Barcelona, the way Barcelona have made their style, the dominating style in women's football in Europe, has opened the way to the Spanish national team. Of course, you have to give, even with all the controversy surrounding him, but you have to give credit to Jorge Vilda, the national team coach. But there's this influence. You cannot deny that. Everyone here is watching how Barcelona women's team are playing. When Barcelona games are shown on television, they draw very good audiences. And people like what they do. And the stadium where they play is normally full. It's normally a full house in every league game. That means 6,000 people, which is rather good figure. So I think it may seem an easy analysis to do, but I think it is correct to compare the two teams and the two stories, because they have many things in common, in my opinion.
So one thing that really jumped out about me, Ayatana Bonmati, who, you know, it's just fabulous to watch, tone setter in midfield for this team, gifted, creative. But she had a quote after it, which goes back to our prior point of the gap being narrowed physically and competitively with countries around the world, including Spain, obviously the World Cup winner. She said, quote, "We can compete. We can fight for every ball. We know how to suffer and we know how to win." And that was something that drove the U.S. women's national team for so many years. They were more competitive than any women in the world. And they actually taught the rest of the world, in my opinion, to be more competitive in women's sports. But boy, the gap is narrowed. And I thought that was quite the quote coming from somebody as technical and skillful as her, because it is the marriage of the two things that we're seeing. Now, with Barcelona and Real Madrid leading the way, there were eight players from each team on this team. You know, I would think the NWSL here in the U.S., who likes to say it's the greatest league in the world, had better be careful, because of these large brands, and they may come in for players. Their brands are bigger than anything that's here in the U.S.
We have to be careful with it, because, of course, there's quality in the Spanish league, but it's a 16-team league. There are many things that, in my opinion, haven't been done properly in Spanish football, because if you look at the leagues surrounding us, German league, English league, French league, Italian league, all these leagues are 10 to 12 teams. So you have very competitive teams. The league is sustainable. In Spain, there has been a boom of women's football in last year. So everything has grown very quickly and sometimes too quickly. So I think, as we say here, the house has been built starting with the roof and not with the foundation. So many things have to still, in my opinion, have to change. But it's clear, and you know that. Mediterranean countries, Southern European countries, Italy, Spain, are quality in football terms. The boys, the girls learning football, playing in the streets, playing in courtyards, at school, in local football clubs. What they learn, what they have is technical ability, because this is not a nation of strong people. We are not Germans. We are not English. We are not Swede, we are not the Norwegian. We are people that are not strong physically. The Spanish sportsman best attribute is player quality, technical ability. But in women's football, when you compete against team, in maybe in women's football, the physical difference can't be or maybe more important than in men's football. So when Barcelona started to compete at the international level, playing the Champions League, they knew they could be, or they were technically, at least technically level with other great teams in Europe. But the first thing they had to improve was the physical side. And they were, I can't say they were committed to work on the physical side to be able to compete physically with all the teams in Europe. So as I was saying before, Barcelona opened the way, showed the way to the Spanish national team. And I think they've done that. And they've tried to enhance their technical quality and make the technical quality a more important factor to win games. But of course, they've also worked in the physical side of football. And that's
Gordy, when did that turn? When did the physical side of it turn? And when was the recognition? And are there visible signs that you see? Because you cover this in Spain. Have you seen, you know, are there more physical trainers involved? What have you seen that really validates this? Because we see it on the field.
As I was saying, you have to follow what Barcelona has done. And I would say 2017, 2018, like 6-7 years ago, when Barcelona was already the clear winner of the Spanish League, but was struggling in the Champions League, getting out of the Champions League in the quarterfinals. They played against Wolfsburg, they were out. They played against English teams, they struggled. So 6-7 years ago, when that happened, I think they realized the physical side had to be enhanced. So I would say this, 6-7 years ago, and the work done has been very good. And as you were saying, more physical trainers, more workload on the physical side of the game to make the teams more competitive. And there you have the results.
All right. So that's part one with Jordi Sunyer of TV3 in Barcelona. We're going to come back with part two shortly. Quick word here, though, for our good friends at Hugh O'Connor's Pub. Now, if you're going out I-10, it's on the right-hand side in the Marquee Entertainment Center. Hugh O'Connor's Pub, incredible whiskey offering, beer offerings, great pub food like bangers and mash and shepherd's pie, real, real pub feel, home of the Liverpool supporters group. Go in there, say hello to Goose, say hello to David. It's Hugh O'Connor's Pub. We've done a lot of live shows out there. It's a great spot. And if you want the real soccer pub feel, it's Hugh O'Connor's Pub. Katie Freeway in the Marquee Entertainment Center. We'll take a break. We'll come back.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Okay, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5, as always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Now look, you get in an accident, you want the best. Doesn't matter what it is, car, boat, motorcycle, maybe you drive an 18-wheeler, maybe you work construction. You need the best in representation. The best in representation is the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, it's DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW. 713-CALL-NOW. By the way, bilingual. So if you call the Daspit Law Firm. You're going to get lawyers and a staff under John Daspit that are going to work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. By the way, they are bringing soccer on the airwaves to you. Here's part two with Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona. Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona. No better guy to be talking about. Spain winning the World Cup 1-0 over England. Olga Carmona would get the goal. Carmona was named the final MVP. Amazingly, she found out after the match. I mean, this was just so sad that her father had passed. I want to go to Las 15, and there was an element of controversy around this. You had 15 players that cited poor treatment, tactics, training in October, wrote the federation. There were problems with Jorge Vilda, the coach. That's who they targeted. I mean, is this simply proof that you can win in spite of a coach and a federation that doesn't back you?
It is, because as I was saying before, it's a remarkable story because of the players. There have always been complaints by the players against the national team coach. The former national team coach, Ignacio Quereda, who was coaching Spain until the 2015 World Cup, was also heavily criticized by players as a manager that was stuck in the past in training methods and in understanding what was women's football, what a women's dressing room needed. And there were similar sayings about Jorge Vilda. And in October, when these 15 very important Spanish players, I would say 15 of the top Spanish players, publish their statement about what was happening in the Spanish national team, it emerged that, for example, Jorge Vilda wanted to discipline them very heavily, and he forced them to leave the doors of their rooms during concentrations with the national team open until midnight, so he could check what they were doing, the players were doing in their rooms until midnight, because he wasn't sure they were doing what was needed before a professional football game. And of course, that created discomfort among the players. But apart from that, this makes titles, because it's a story that's shocking. Mm-hmm. But the core of all that was the methods. I must say, I've spoken to several journalists that cover the Spanish national team, and they say, hey, Jordi, there are still many players that have gone to the World Cup that reverted their decision not to go to the World Cup. And they are still saying off the record that Vilda's methods are not up to date, are not good. There's a picture that has gone viral in Spain these days. Quarterfinal of this World Cup against the Netherlands, cooling break. The Dutch players go to the substitutes area, and there they hear their coach, their manager, Andries Jonker, giving them instructions for the last 15 or 20 minutes of play. The Spanish players were on the center of the pitch, talking, of course, in group, but talking one another without Jorge Vilda, giving themselves the solutions needed to win that game. That's that feature that has gone viral. I think it has a lot of meaning about what was happening. But the players created a kind of bonding, a kind of family, a kind of group feeling. They felt they could show the world that they had power, because of course, once the World Cup has finished, we have to see this will be very interesting. What will happen in Barcelona's dressing room? Because the same dressing room will be shared by players like Mapi León, like Patrick Guijarro, like Claudia Pina, that finally refused to go to the World Cup, and players that reverted their decision, like Aitana Bonmatí, for example, went to the World Cup and won. What will happen? Because all these players, the 15, as they have been named, fought for better rights, better salaries, better conditions for women's football. They fought against the Spanish FA, but there was this split among them. Some of them reverted, went to the World Cup, won, and won lots of money. Before the final, I think it was 20,000 euros per player as a prize for reaching
270,000 per player in dollars.
Imagine.
It's good
and
money.
These, that's a lot.
That's life. That's going to be life changing for a lot of these women's players.
Probably. But what happens with these three girls, for example, the three Barcelona ones and the other ones that didn't go to the World Cup, like Amaiur Sarriegi, for example, that are that have fought for their fellows, for these other players? They were together, they are not together anymore. It's a very difficult situation. And I wouldn't like to be Barcelona manager Jonathan Giraldez, because this dressing room situation right now can be explosive.
But how do we know it's going to be explosive? Maybe everybody's just in an agreement that, look, everybody got to make their own decision about what was the best way to go. They made a statement by coming together. They got tremendous publicity. It cited the federation. They went and won it now, which that's got to move the federation now, Jordy, right? I mean, they've got to invest more now. They can't hold back. They just won the World Cup.
Yeah, we all agree about this. But the thing is, once the World Cup has started, all these group of players, the ones that were there and the ones that weren't there, have they stayed publicly and have they done it enough that they were fighting again together? I mean, of course there was this split, but I think that what you were saying should be correct. If during the World Cup, the players that were playing for Spain in the World Cup had said, we are here, but we still are, and we still remember what our colleagues did before this. We are with Mapi, we stick with Mapi, we stick with Patri, and this World Cup is also theirs. And I don't think they have done this with the force and the power required to avoid misunderstandings after the World Cup.
That's a really good and a really fair point that you're making. If you know, they reference them during the World Cup or after when they win it, I agree with you. I think that's important to consider.
Yeah, of course they spoke about being a group, creating a family. They spoke about the players. You didn't hear players, Spanish players in mixed zone, in press conferences, praising Jorge Vilda more than you can expect this PR world in which we are all involved in which, of course, players know what to say in front of a microphone. They were only talking about what they as players were doing during the World Cup, but at the same time they were not talking about all the process. And we have to think, as you were saying, the process that has brought Spain to win the Women's World Cup against all odds, and that should boost the Spanish FA support to the women's football, is a merit or has credit thanks to the fight of all this group of players, not the ones that have played the World Cup, but also the ones that haven't, and past players, of course. This has been said in television during the World Cup broadcast. Many former Spanish national team players were had as color commentators or analysts, and every game was the same. Hey, we must remember Mapi, we must remember Patri, but the players were not talking about this.
Well, this is a really interesting parallel to what's going on in the United States. You just won the World Cup of Spain. The entire world is looking at your country. These women have power now based on what they did on the field and what they showed, not only their own country, but the rest of the world. So you have to think that the investment is going to have to come from the federation. I don't think there's any question, because you've got the sentiment of an entire country behind you now. Now, conversely, what you do with this now as a group and as a federation, everybody should be a little bit more unified now and understand the incredible opportunity that's hand. Conversely, the U.S. 2.5 years ago decided to make soccer secondary. They forgot all their core values that were set by the legendary players like Mia Hamm, Christine Lilly, On and on we go, right? Abby Wambach, all them. Those core values always got passed through. Well, it was lost in this World Cup, and everybody saw it, and even opposing teams, they saw an air of arrogance. They saw an air of entitlement from the women's national team, generally from a couple of players, and it really hurt the country. Now, we're also in a place of real opportunity now to cleanse the house and get back to making football the priority. So I think it's amazing parallel between Spain and the U.S. in differing ways.
Yeah, but it's also a different situation because there was in the U.S. there was a clear and complete and solid structure of women's football, and the work done in the U.S. is
yeah, but Jordy, you got to remember, because of the emergence of countries like Spain, it doesn't look as structured anymore. We don't have the best playing against the best at the youth level. We don't have a Barcelona or a Real Madrid. We're scattered. Right. We don't have our best youth players playing against each other because there's so many differing leagues and so much money that changes hands in the youth game.
Yeah, yeah. But
well, we have to do an entire rethink of this now based on the success of the Spains and the other countries around the world.
I totally agree with you, but it seems as I was hearing, it's a matter of a change or a string of decisions that have to be changed in the next years.
Leadership.
But
leadership
don't
at the federation.
Don't get how could I say that? The thing is, as I was saying at the beginning, this has been Spain winning the World Cup has been the perfect storm. Why? Because you have this base of technical quality of players, because that's a trademark of Spanish football. But apart from any structure, you see a street game, boys, girls playing in parks. They have this spark. They have this quality. So it doesn't depend on any decision by any federation, any association, even any club. You see how this World Cup has gone. Spain hasn't played the United States. Spain played against Japan. They lost 4-0. So they had a good a good series of games. They didn't play against some of the strongest rivals on paper in the World Cup. So I'm not saying this has been luck. It hasn't been luck, of course, but many Spanish successes in sport, and I think this is one of them, are more thanks to a spark of individual quality, a particular area in the country in which a particular sport is well considered, well worked. That happens in this area of the country. That happens in Catalonia, because many Spanish national teams in lesser sports, minority sports like field hockey or water polo or roller hockey, the clear majority of players of the Spanish national team are Catalan, because there's a strong sporting association tradition in Catalan civil culture. There are many associations, clubs that play amateur sport, and that gives a tremendous base for then professional sport. But this is only an area of the country. In many other sports, in many other areas, there is a lack of a national structure and solid structure. Then the decisions taken there can be correct or can't be incorrect, but there's a lack of it. So it has happened during the years. And I'm afraid that with the Spanish women's national team, it could be the same. There's a great opportunity. I agree with you. But let's see what happens, because as I was saying, the Spanish FA didn't believe at all in women's football until this has happened. What has happened in the World Cup exploded in front of their eyes. What will happen next? In a normal situation, it's what we are saying. There should be an increase in sponsorship, in media attention, in everything. Will this all happen? Let me tell you, I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure, believe me, because I know the story and I know what's been happening in this country for many years.
Interesting that you say that, because this is a watershed moment. And if you know, these types of events are the ones that you can catapult off and really take a deeper dive on the sport and who it affects and where it goes and how you invest in player development because you won a World Cup. So it's interesting that you say that, Jordy. And look, as always, we thank you very much for coming on the show. We'll get to some Barcelona talk and La Liga talk the next time we get you on the show. But I want to thank you very much. You know, just from the standpoint of celebrations and everything, what are they doing in Spain with the national team? Because I think they just arrived home, right?
They are arriving home on Monday evening Spanish time. And they are going at this. We have a tremendous heat wave these days here in Spain, 40 degrees Celsius in many parts of the country. So people are leaving during the night because it's fresher than in the than in the afternoon or early evening. So they are arriving this late evening, I think around 10 or 11 p.m. Spanish time. But then they go directly to a party that's being prepared in Madrid, and I think it will last until the wee small hours of the next morning. So they will celebrate for sure in Madrid,
well,
of course.
Well, great moment for Spain and the Spanish women's national team. Fantastic, a lot of storylines around it, and let's hope that. It's the impetus for the Federation to do more for women's football in Spain. Jordy, as always, thank you very much for coming on. We appreciate your insight.
Let's hope so. Thank you very much, Glenn.
Jordy Sunyer, TV3. That wraps it up here tonight on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. 713-CALL-NOW. Remember, subscribe to the podcast at Spotify, Apple, Google. Those are the places to go. You can hit me up on Twitter and Instagram at Glenn Davis Sock, at Soccer Matters GD. And until next Thursday, we go back to our Thursday time. I'm Glenn Davis. Remember, soccer matters.